On the eve of humanoid mass production, the robotics industry shifts from products to operational infrastructure. AI is now moving beyond a technology that speaks well to a technology that gets work done on site. Humanoids are the result of that shift, and that's why discussion in the robotics industry is moving from performance to mass production and operations. What is happening now is not, it seems, possible, but a phase in which a calendar appears. From when, where, and how much? The return of humanoids is not a demo, but a calendar. If you explain why humanoids are drawing attention again, as because they look like people, you miss the point. What matters is that, through a human-like form, humanoids can push automation while using the environment humans have already built as it is. Factories and logistics centers are not spaces designed from the ground up for robots. The standard heights of door handles, the specifications of tools, the height of workbenches, and the standards for parts boxes and pallets are all set to human standards. The higher the cost of changing that environment, the more advantageous it becomes for robots to adapt to the environment. Humanoids are precisely the card that can enter without tearing the environment apart. That's why the most convincing signal in the market right now is not flashy performance. The real signal is the moment a schedule gets set. For example, if Boston Dynamics puts out a message like, "We are immediately starting production of the product version and deployment is planned for 2026, that means the story has moved from the lab to manufacturing and sales. The fact that the first stage for that deployment is a manufacturing site like Hyundai Motor Group is even more important. Humanoids ultimately have to work. Places like the automotive industry, where processes are long, repetition is high, and safety rules are tight, have strong reasons to use humanoids and clear verification standards. In other words, if it succeeds there, it creates a reference that can be carried into other industries. Meanwhile, the story that humanoids actually enter factories cannot run on a single company's promotion alone. Manufacturing partners, process design, quality standards, safety protocols, and maintenance systems all have to align at once. That's why the recent scenes that stand out are coming from the manufacturing ecosystem. News such as Foxconn and NVIDIA discussing deploying humanoids on a Houston AI server factory line, and even mentioning a schedule, signals that robots are beginning to be treated not as a future industry, but as a production technology. At this stage, the tasks being discussed are generally not science fiction. Targets tend to be handwork segments that have high repetition and can be standardized, such as cable insertion, parts handling, and assembly assistance. The diffusion path of humanoids is also determined by this logic. The first diffusion is not replacement, but supplementation. Night, repetitive, and hazardous work, processes where hiring is difficult, and stages with large quality variance become the first automation targets. And then comes coexistence with humans. Humanoids are likely to work not as standalone machines, but next to humans, using the same tools humans use. For that, predictability becomes more important than smartness. What the field wants is not peak performance, but uptime, safety, and habits that prevent accidents. From this point on, the robotics industry becomes not a technology competition, but an industrial engineering competition. The robot's brain is not the model, but the learning process. It is difficult to pinpoint a single reason humanoids suddenly became feasible, but the biggest axis is the change in how they learn. In the past, to increase what a robot could do well, humans had to write rules directly or attach separate algorithms and sensor configurations for each task. That approach had weak scalability. Variables differ by site. The shapes and materials of objects differ, and lighting and floor conditions differ. So for humanoids to become real, they needed generality that allows them to keep working even when the environment changes, and the method of creating that generality has changed rapidly over the past few years. The key word here is the foundation model. A foundation model for robots does not simply mean a larger neural network. It means a form in which the scale and diversity of data and the entire learning pipeline can be run industrially. When teaching a robot a job, the most expensive thing is trial and error. Humans learn by falling and bumping into things. But if a robot learns like that in the field, costs explode. So the industry transplants most trial and error into simulation and synthetic data. Much of what it means to say a robot learns in the field is, in fact, changing into it first learns in a virtual environment similar to the field. This change makes the sentence, data is a factory real. Just as a factory inputs parts to output products, a learning process inputs data and logs to output capability. And the more sophisticated this process becomes, the competitive edge comes from failure management rather than motor torque. It is unavoidable that a robot will make mistakes while working. What matters is whether it stops when it fails, whether it retreats safely, whether it hands off to a human, whether it retries, and how quickly that failure returns to learning. In an industry where there are more failed scenes than successful scenes, a system that turns failure into an asset becomes the competitive edge. At this point, when organizations like Google DeepMind release robot-oriented models and emphasize object manipulation and spatial reasoning, it implies one thing. A robot's intelligence is not an extension of conversational ability, but must include understanding of space and physical properties. Picking up an object is not simply matching coordinates. Physical properties like slipping, reflection, elasticity, and adhesion come in, and if the robot cannot predict those properties, it fails differently every time. So the challenge the robotics industry faces is not a robot that understands speech, but a robot that steadily accumulates success rates in the physical world. Here, the core capabilities of humanoids also change. Extreme motions like running or jumping are good for publicity, but on-site productivity comes from hands and arms. ROI is created in organizing cables, inserting parts with proper orientation, and handling packaging materials. Ultimately, half of humanoid competition is industrializing the hand. To industrialize the hand, hardware alone is not enough. Vision and touch, and recovery strategies when things go wrong, must be combined. That's why a trend likely to stand out over the next 2 to 3 years is not hand tricks, but hand repetition. The ability to do the same thing thousands of times a day, without variance, is what opens the market. The essence of mass production is the cost sheet, quality control, and safety. The moment humanoids leave the lab and enter industry, the question converges to one. At what cost can you make them? And how rarely do they break down? Here, cost is not simply the unit price of parts. It is total cost, including process design, testing, defect rates, supply stability, and repair systems. Humanoids have many components. The drivetrain, motors and reducers, batteries and thermal management, sensors, onboard computing, harnessing, wiring, frames and exterior and safety devices all create costs. In this context, one performance improvement often raises costs, and one cost reduction often cuts performance. Mass production is the process of adjusting these tensions to find a balance point the field can accept. In particular, China's momentum can be seen as pushing this mass production logic the fastest. China has a dense hardware manufacturing ecosystem, and the speed of procurement, machining, assembly, and logistics is fast. When this combines with government-level support and procurement policies, prices can drop sharply in certain categories. This structure once became real in electric vehicles, and a similar scene could be recreated in humanoids. As a result, the global market can enter a structure where top performance and lowest unit cost simultaneously apply pressure from different camps. However, mass production does not end with price. Quality is a bigger wall. A humanoid is not a simple machine. It is a machine that moves in the same space as humans. This means safety is not a part of the product. It is the product itself. What speed it moves at, what force it limits contact to, under what conditions it stops, how it detects collisions, and what the emergency stop conditions are become the core of design. And if an accident happens, responsibility flows. Which parties, manufacturer, operator, site manager, and the task instruction system, bear responsibility, how insurance attaches, and what conditions regulators require determine the speed of the market. Even if humanoids are technologically possible, if they are not socially permitted, diffusion is slow. When quality and safety mesh, standardized industrial environments open first. A factory may seem variable, but in fact it is far more standardized than a home or a street. Safety zones can be set, floor conditions can be managed, lighting can be controlled, and processes can be documented. That's why early diffusion of humanoids is likely to begin in controllable spaces like factories and logistics. Conversely, the home may become the last market. Homes have too many variables, too many unpredictable elements like children and pets, and the social cost of accidents is high. In that sense, Hyundai Motor Group trying to deploy Boston Dynamics humanoid to manufacturing sites is highly symbolic. Automotive manufacturing is an industry with extremely high safety and quality and strict process standards. If humanoids accumulate uptime there while taking on repetitive tasks, humanoids change status from cool robots to production equipment. From that moment, competition becomes not a hardware startup competition but a manufacturing competition. Part supply, test automation, defect analysis, and repair/part supply chains determine victory. Robots are not sold, they are operated. If you only look at the business model of the humanoid era through how many units were sold, it's easy to misunderstand the market. What early humanoid customers truly want to buy is not the robot, but productivity. So robots increasingly move from products to operational services. It's not buy a robot and finish, but a model that contracts uptime and results. It is often expressed as ROAS, robots as a service, but the core is simple. Customers do not want to increase assets. They want to make their cost structure predictable. They want manufacturers to absorb the uncertainty of maintenance and upgrades. Since a robot breakdown can stop a production line, customers buy not peak performance, but a system that does not stop. In this structure, control and operations software becomes effectively half the product. No matter how many robots enter, how tasks are assigned, how safety zones are set, how path conflicts with humans are prevented, when updates are deployed, and how failure logs are collected and fed back into learning determines success or failure. Humanoids are not operated as standalone machines but as fleets groups, connected over a network. Key metrics are not performance but uptime, mean time to recovery, incident rate, and consistency of task success. In other words, the robotics industry increasingly becomes an operations industry, like aircraft engines or industrial facilities. From that perspective, the trend of companies like NVIDIA bundling a robotics foundation model with simulation frameworks is closer to an attempt to see robots as a stack, not a product. When the development stack is standardized, robot operations are standardized. And when operations are standardized, robots become infrastructure terminals rather than individual machines. At this point, updates become core. Even after being deployed in the field, any robot gradually improves through software, and as it consumes failure logs, its success rate improves. For customers, a new update may become more important than a new model. In this operations industry view, Tesla's humanoid has another meaning. The reason Elon Musk pushes humanoids strongly is because he positions robots not as a single product line, but as the company's future growth axis. Of course, with high public exposure comes debate about the gap between demos and reality. But the more important point for a trend report is that this field has moved from technical display to production strategy and capital allocation. When large companies start discussing production-ready versions and talking about generation roadmaps, robots are no longer an R&D project. They become a business portfolio. And this trend changes the definition of on-site labor. A simplistic conclusion that as humanoids increase, people disappear, misses reality. On-site, the work of managing robots, designing safety rules, handling exceptions, and checking quality increases. Workers move from people who do things with their hands to people who coordinate the robot's work. The more robots, the more people are reassigned into more advanced roles. Ultimately, the robotics industry is not an industry that simply replaces employment. It is an industry that changes the shape of jobs. The US stack, China's scale, Korea's references. If you view humanoid competition as who made the coolest robot, you lose focus. The competition ahead is a platform competition, and platform competition splits into three things: stack, scale, and references. The United States builds strengths in the stack. If chips, simulation, models, development frameworks, and operations tool chains converge in one direction, an ecosystem is created. On top of this ecosystem, diverse hardware appears and disappears, but the core stack remains. It means an app store for the robotics industry can emerge. In that case, the winner is not necessarily only robot manufacturers. The side that has the robot OS, simulation, and data pipeline gains dominance. China builds strengths in scale. If the hardware manufacturing ecosystem and government support combine, unit costs drop quickly. When unit costs drop, real use increases. When real use increases, operational data accumulates. When data accumulates, performance rises again. If this virtuous cycle spins quickly, initial performance gaps can be narrowed through price and volume. Also, China's manufacturing sites themselves become a massive testbed. Many small pilots can run simultaneously across countless factories and logistics hubs. In that process, problems that didn't work well get fixed quickly, and those fixes are reflected in the next volume. Korea can build strengths in references. The reason is simple. Korea has high density of manufacturing sites, deep experience in process automation, and high-quality standards. Humanoids are an industry where does it work becomes less important than does it run stably. At that point, references become trust. If robots prove uptime in Korea's demanding manufacturing environment, overseas customers can purchase that reference safely. In particular, if a company like Hyundai Motor Group that has a global manufacturing network can design on-site validation and expansion simultaneously, references can accumulate even faster. As these three axes overlap, over the next 5 to 10 years, it is unlikely that one humanoid type will monopolize the market. Rather, it is likely to split into two layers. On the upper layer sit general-purpose platforms such as models, simulation, and operation software. On the lower layer lie diverse hardware tailored to each industry and site. Some companies capture the upper layer, others the lower layer. And over the long run, they try to encroach on each other. If hardware monopolizes data and operations, it tries to absorb the platform. If the platform dominates the ecosystem, it tries to make hardware replaceable parts. This balance of power creates the power of the robotics industry. What matters here is an attitude that does not overstate the future of humanoids. Humanoids are very likely to grow, but the speed and scale are not determined only by victory of technology. Cost and safety, operations and trust, regulation and insurance, labor markets, and social agreement all must align simultaneously. Still, today's trajectory is different from the past. In the past, humanoids were a technology that seems possible. Now they have become a technology for which industry searches for reasons to use. The moment schedules appear, the language of mass production emerges, and operational metrics begin to be discussed, this industry moves in a direction that is hard to reverse. Finally, the biggest question this change raises is this. Do humanoids replace people or do they redesign industry? Replacement creates fear. Redesign creates strategy. What we are seeing now is closer to the strategy of redesign than the fear of replacement. Robots do not push humans out. Robots take on the segments humans struggle to endure, and humans move to design, supervision, quality, and exception handling. Industry does more work with fewer people, and in the process, organizational forms and job definitions change. Humanoid mass production is not the finish line of the robotics industry. It is the starting line for an era in which AI with a body becomes a standard tool of industry.